You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. Read all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Lots going on at the site. There's some late summer recruiting buzz. I'm covering a bunch of stuff from the Olympics. And then there's lots of stories that are already up, but then more still to come from Big Ten Media Days. And that's what we're going to discuss in today's episode. Steve and I are going to go back and forth on a couple key takeaways. We also fielded questions from listeners over on my Twitter account. And then, you know, we'll tackle a little bit of another topic that kind of emerged during Big Ten Media Days, and that is the latest round of conference realignment. So it should be a fun episode, slowly creeping toward football season. In the next couple of weeks, we'll talk about who we think are the most important players for Michigan this season. We might do our draft like we did last year. Got some other fun preseason content coming your way in the next month, 5 weeks is pretty much 5 weeks from now will be game week. So for Michigan, at least. So anyway, should be a fun few weeks, but let's talk about Big Ten Media Days. Steve, I was down there. You were not, but I know you followed along. A lot of the takeaways from Jim Harbaugh, I don't think were like, or the Michigan players who spoke, I don't think were like surprising takeaways, but I'm curious. So maybe not the biggest surprise or the biggest thing that you learned, but what was the biggest thing that stood out to you from the Big Ten Media Day, from Michigan's appearance, I should say?
Harbaugh gave like, I thought, more like in depth. You know, it felt like a better interview than he normally did. And we did the roundtable stuff as well. He just felt more engaged in the event than he normally has been, which, again, I don't know, what does that mean? I don't know. But it's more interesting to read it, you know, when there's uh-huh. stuff still fleshed out a little bit more. But the thing we talked about a little bit before we got on is all the talk about culture, and particularly from the defensive players who were in attendance, Hutchinson and Josh Ross. Thought all the focus on culture in general, how it applies to the Ohio State game, et cetera, I thought was pretty interesting. You know, maybe the most eye-opening stuff. You're not shocking anybody necessarily, but I thought the discussion around Mike McDonald and the focus being a little more on building the culture in the locker room and on the field together than the X's and O's type stuff, I thought was pretty fascinating when you consider it is going to be a new scheme. I mean, obviously they're focusing on the X's and O's, but to make culture kind of the number one priority, I suppose, from a defensive standpoint right off the get-go, I think it's smart. But it was also interesting to kind of hear them sort of go out of the way to admit that and talk about that, during the media day stuff. So yeah, Ross and Hutchinson, great interviews. They always have been. Uh-huh. But I thought that was the stuff I thought that stood out the most to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it wasn't necessary. I don't think any answer was like surprising. Maybe the one part where Jim Harbaugh, and I mentioned in my preview of the event that he probably was going to go one way or the other. He was either going to put his full support behind Cade McNamara, or he was going to tease that it was a quarterback battle. I guess those are really the only two options, but I sensed that he might just continue to build confidence in Cade McNamara because he doesn't really have anything to lose citing Cade McNamara as the starting quarterback. JJ McCarthy's not going to transfer as a true freshman if he isn't listed as co-starter or anything. Might be a different story a year from now. You know, maybe that's where McCarthy will want to hear his name mentioned as well. And then Alan Bowman, I mean, he just transferred in. He's not gonna turn around and leave just because Harbaugh doesn't call Cade McNamara the starter, because Bowman hasn't even been able to practice yet. I think optically it made all the sense in the world. I think fans probably liked hearing a little bit more of a, you know, say it with authority. Cause I think even Shea Patterson in 2019, when everyone knew he was the starter, you know, Jim still did kind of he teased like, oh, we're working on packages, or maybe we have two quarterbacks on the field and say, you know, things like that. I think saying Cade McNamara was the starter with authority, saying he was the starter, not a surprise, maybe saying it as confidently as he did. That's not something Jim Harbaugh has done at Big Ten Media Days. I'm running through the scenarios. Maybe 2017, he called Wilton Spate the starter ahead of that season. But all the other times, he's almost surprised everyone by insisting that they're open quarterback battles. I believe Michigan and Rutgers are the only schools to not send a quarterback to Big Ten Media Days yet since Jim Harbaugh arrived. Anyway, so I thought that was obviously notable because it's the quarterback. But yeah, I'm with you on the defensive side of the ball, the culture, I think the bluntness in which they discussed last season. You know, Josh Ross, he called it a reality check. He had a pretty adamant statement that it was a wake-up call. Aiden Hutchinson, who's always, I always appreciate, he's a great quote. He isn't like a PR friendly quote every time. You know, he reeled himself in a decent amount, but you know, he tells it like it is. And I think his comments, which I shared on Twitter, and I think I included it in the story about Mike McDonald, as you said, building a culture. You know, obviously there are X's and O's changes, but you also need your defense to be bought in. And Steve, you and I have talked about it. I think last season was a very hard sell for Michigan's defensive players to buy in, because really 2 years in a row, Don Brown had the exact same season. Pretty good against most teams, talking about 2018 and 2019. You know, shut down a good amount of teams. And then as soon as they play a dynamic playmaker, the wheels kind of fall off. Or as soon as they play a pretty dynamic offense, thinking about Ohio State twice, you know, Wisconsin, Florida, trying to think, Alabama, you know, those are kind of the big ones that stand out. Just seemed like I think going into the 2020 season, it felt like Don Brown was kind of maybe not a fired man walking, but it really, I think very few fans were in support of him being kept after the 2019 season. And I think you and I objectively said, how do you keep him? How do you convince players that this defense is going to work when the results just really haven't been there in almost 3 years? And so I think some of it's natural. I think there's going to be naturally more buy-in just because Mike McDonald's, he's from the NFL. He's got a lot of newness to his defense. But I think Aiden Hutchinson's point was that, you know, Mike isn't just fixing the X's and O's. He isn't just coaching in practice. He's trying to make it so that the culture is strong, and culture can mean a lot of different things in the world of college athletics. I read culture as the players want to work hard for the coaches. Michigan basketball talks about culture all the time. There's lots of layers, there's lots of nuance, but at the end of the day, the impact that it has and what Juwan Howard has built is that the Michigan basketball team wants to work hard and wants to attend practice and wants to buy in. And so I think to me, it was kind of notable just how candid Josh Ross and Aiden Hutchinson were. And Hassan Haskins had a couple quotes kind of about the offense. He didn't feel like it was dialed in after things started to go south for the season. Of course, they were going to say things like this because that's the narrative that you have to push if you're Michigan right now. I mean, you have to tell yourself, but also tell fans, like, you have to vow for improvement or vow for redemption, things like that. So, but I think just how candid it was. Yeah, I agree. That stood out quite a bit to me. And I think it's something that I take, like, I don't think it's just puff. You know, I try to filter out the coach speak, you know, kind of what has to be said versus what is said. And so, yeah, I felt like that was significant. As far as Jim Harbaugh, he definitely was friendlier. He was friendlier. He smiled more. He didn't just answer question and, you know, have long answers for the question. Like, the joke is that he often runs out the clock. You know, like, he knows he has to be there a certain amount of time. So when someone asks about something he can kind of filibuster on, he does. But no, he actually gave pretty thoughtful answers to a lot of stuff, you know, including the Ohio State rivalry. So, Steve, I think it's been reported. I think we had a couple posts on it that there are countdown clocks again. You know, everyone's seen the weight room sign that says, "What are you doing to beat Ohio State today?" What did you make of that? Because I mentioned before the event that Big Ten Media Days is notorious. Michigan reporters do it. Ohio State reporters do it. It happens, but you get asked a lot about the rivalries because all these reporters are paid to be there for 2 days and their team only speaks for one. So of course there was going to be a lot of questions about Ohio State, but the big narrative from all three players and Jim Harbaugh as well was it just seemed like a little bit stronger response to those questions than in previous years. Instead of denying the significance of the rivalry or downplaying it, saying, "Oh, you know, we're really focused on all of our opponents or every game matters," there seemed to be a little bit more of a kick to what they were saying. You know, Jim Harbaugh, do it or die trying. You know, I think Aiden Hutchinson, Josh Ross both had pretty colorful quotes about the Buckeyes and the renewed focus. What did you make of that?
And there's a lot of different ways you could kind of take it. Well, the one thing I didn't really like is like it, what it did do, sort of created this idea that the game isn't cared about as much or whatever. I mean, the idea that Michigan is not doing whatever they can do to beat Ohio State, I think is still kind of a silly situation. In fact, I sometimes have kind of believed that Michigan's biggest issue against Ohio State has been almost a paralysis by analysis type deal. I think they've come out so flat. I think they've come out so flat because I think they're not loose enough in that game. They come out tight and then they're down two touchdowns. That's my sense. You know, I could be totally wrong there. We know one thing. Well, you know, a lot of things, but with this stuff, we know one thing. From an outward standpoint, both fan base, from the top down, from what you can actually physically see, hear, whatever, is Ohio State is way, it comes off that Ohio State is way more into this than Michigan is. So, and that, like I said, that goes everywhere. You have verbal commits for Ohio State that do the cross out their M's and stuff on their social media, like guys who haven't even stepped foot in their locker room or in their weight room and stuff like that. Right. I mean, it's ingrained and, you know, so I don't know, like
even the alumni 3-on-3 tournament. I don't know if you saw this, but the Ohio State alumni team, I think it's called like Carmen something. They cross out the M. They're like nearing 40 years old playing these 3-on-3 basketball tournaments.
Right.
And it's basketball and they're crossing out the M.
Right. So one may argue you look at a game like 18 you know, where Michigan was, I think they were actually favored. You know, Ohio State should have lost to Maryland. And then Ohio State comes out and just waxes Michigan, looks like a completely different team. I think you, if you're somebody on the outside, you could look at that and say, you maybe have a legitimate argument. Well, like, this game is their whole season, even though they have are almost always in the conversation for like other aspirations, right? So to see this sort of public shift a little bit from Michigan, I also think it's I think it has to be measured to a certain extent from Michigan's end, just because they've had such little success in the rivalry. I don't think the outward type stuff that you can see from like Ohio State social media or their players or whatever fans, like, you know, Michigan's got to win a game or two here to really maybe be able to kind of sit at the table and start talking a little bit again. But within the locker room, that's totally different. You know, these are new guys that come in. It's a new team every year, a new opportunity. So, you know, I think seeing them come out publicly about it a little bit more direct, I don't think it's a negative thing. I mean, at this point, it's, you know, what, I don't want to say how much worse could it be, but almost, you know, it's like, what type of approach kind of haven't we seen Michigan try to take when it comes to this game? You know, and things haven't really worked for whatever reason. So, you know, I look at it as a positive, but it doesn't mean a ton either necessarily, at least not right now. Right. So
it doesn't change what the score is going to be.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there's still to win that game. I think they're going to have to win a lot of games heading up to it, you know, type deal, just because. I think it's just there are many journeys to be taken from now until November that may have end up having a bigger say in how Michigan will perform in that game, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, I think the big thing is, I think it was, I think the return of the countdown clocks. I mean, this was not something that like only Brady Hoke did. I mean, these were things Ohio State does. These are things that are pretty common in Michigan history. I don't know who had the first countdown clock, but it wasn't Brady Hoke. I don't think it hurts, because I think it gives you just a little bit more motivation in the summer, gives you just a little bit more motivation in you know, when you're doing like bench press, and you know, Michigan State players, they do what's called a Michigan rep. So if they're doing 10 reps, even if they're tired or gassed or whatever, you know, like come in for the Michigan rep. And I don't know that like, I mean, in theory, you could just do more reps if you have one more in you, but I think it just helps with the motivation, helps you push maybe a little further than, you know, you're just out there a little longer before you're satisfied with your day's work. But I think really, to me, what it was, is I think it was a glimpse into what the leadership for this year's Michigan team is going to be like. And I think Ross, I know people have misgivings about his game, but you know, Ross and Hutchinson both grew up Michigan fans in the state of Michigan. They have family members that played for Michigan, starred for Michigan. And I think they're the kind of players who really can embrace they take a lot of pride in trying to turn Michigan back around. I mean, it means a little bit more to them than I think other captains or players in the past. Like, I think it's really, really, really personal to them. So I think they're a part, you know, when they say they're taking Ohio State seriously, I think that's like a glimpse into just how they operate. And Jim Harbaugh had an interesting quote about this. He talked about, he's looking for players with that gene, you know, that pushing, even when a lot of people are laughing at them, even when a lot of people are saying it can't be done, they just keep pushing. And I think he mentioned, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, Josh Ross is two guys who have that gene. I mentioned Hassan Haskins. There were a few players he mentioned, but to me, I think that's a sign, going back to the culture problem. I'm curious, you know, I'll learn a little bit more about my working theory when we talk to players and coaches in August, but that seems to be a little bit of what's different about this season, this offseason versus last offseason. I think last offseason, you know, I think Aiden Hutchinson straight up and said that there was a lot of complacency. If he didn't say complacency, he used a different word. And I think there was a lot of like, I guess not entitlement in the sense of being spoiled, but believing that it would happen if they did the work. Now there's a little bit of that doubt, and there's a little bit of that, okay, you know, they do need the corny, or not corny, but they can benefit from extra motivation. They can benefit from kind of putting a chip on their shoulder about the rivalry, about everything. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson brought up a good point. Why focus on Ohio State instead of other teams? Well, if you can beat Ohio State, you're probably beating the other teams on your schedule. I mean, it's not they're, I think they've lost what, 5 Big Ten games since 2014, something insane like that. It's crazy. And so I actually kind of like it. And I think it shows that there's a little bit more of a tenacity to Michigan's leadership this season. Players and coaches too. It's worth noting Mike Hart, Ron Bellamy, you know, they're not going to sit there and say Ohio State's just another game. Hey, Mike Hart, he's probably, you know, a big part of why he came back to Michigan. Obviously he loves Michigan and he's getting compensated well, but I'm sure he would love to get a victory over Ohio State. You know, Ron Bellamy, I don't know his record against Ohio State, but he obviously takes it really seriously too. So yeah, to me, I don't think it changes my opinion of how that game will unfold. I think I would like to, you know, I think I'm in the boat where I think Ohio State's going to win pretty easily until Michigan proves otherwise. Same time, I think it showed that Michigan, you know, if you need the countdown clocks, fine. But if it gets you locked in, it doesn't really matter what you need. You just need to be locked in and practicing well, harder than last season. I think that's fair to say. Steve, anything else stand out to you from Big Ten Media Days?
Nothing particular. I mean, a lot of what Jim Harbaugh said about NIL and stuff was, I think, expected. Pretty much what everyone said about NIL is what you expected. I did appreciate him saying that your tape is still your best brand. I thought that was a good quote. And I think by and large, outside of like an extenuating circumstance, like an Adrian Nunez, I actually think that Harbaugh is spot on, that your tape is still going to be your best brand. You know, the guys who perform on the field are the guys who are going to get the opportunities. Right. So I think that's actually a really good way to approach it in the locker room too. Cause we talked in a couple episodes ago with the NIL stuff. It's like talking about all the Pandora's box of like just possibilities and like scenarios and stuff. I think A, being fully in favor of it, which Harbaugh's been in favor of this before maybe literally almost anybody in college football was.
For NIL?
I mean, he's been...
No, that's not true. He had a big thing against it back in 2019. He was in favor of it before it became... before July 1st. But he had that whole weird press conference where he went on for like 5 minutes how he wants amateur sports to be amateur sports. And he wants players to... You don't remember that?
Well, clearly I don't.
Okay.
I thought he was, maybe there's what's the other, what's, there was another thing that
one
he was
time big, transfer. He was okay. Way ahead of, yeah, he honestly, I think he deserves some credit for getting it into the national conversation.
Right. But I guess really he's always leaned very heavily towards player rights, yes. He's been a big advocate for the student athlete for sure. So
agreed
either way. That, and then the other thing, and I think Sam made a point to post this on our board, which was another clear takeaway, was the comment about the offensive coordinator situation, about Gattis and how Sharon Moore and Josh Gattis are dividing responsibilities, mm-hmm. which co-OC is, I think, really more of a title than anything else. Josh Gattis is still really kind of the guy running the offense, obviously. not to take anything away from Sharon Moore, but we've seen the co-title kind of added a lot for a little added incentive, you know, in like a contract type situation or whatever. But like he said, I think the way we've come the furthest on offense is there's real trust. The offensive coaches trust Josh and myself. Josh trusts the other offensive coaches, respects them, thinks they're good. Interesting comment, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Very interesting. And so, you know, you wonder because a couple changes made on the offensive side of the ball. You bring Jay Harbaugh, move him, shift him over to tight ends. I think you bring Mike Hart in. Sharon Moore takes over the offensive line. You know, I thought that was a fascinating comment regarding some maybe inconsistencies in the trust over the last couple seasons. So,
yep.
You know, again, we know it's one of those things where it's like, it's really interesting. It's kind of hard to break down, you know, that's going to be something that it's going to manifest itself on the field or it's not going to, but nonetheless, it felt like a semi pointed comment and one that, you know, probably stood out more than most, if not all of Harbaugh's individual comments in the entire session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. And yeah, the trust among the assistant coaches seemed to be a very common narrative Harbaugh mentioned in the press conference. And I don't think that was by accident. You know, I think that was something he really feels
100%
and really 100%. wanted to get out there as well. Just before someone tweets at me or shoots me a message, Harbaugh did change his mind on name, image, likeness since those 2019 comments. But yeah, there's a Monday fall press conference in 2019 where his argument was that college has always been amateur sports and he wanted to keep all, I think, 27 varsity sports at Michigan intact. And so I don't think he was necessarily against players getting compensated, but I think he had reservations. And by the time a year later hit, I think he was, you know, his open letter to college football or open letter to football period. I agree with you, Steve. He's been very for the players from a college football policy perspective. Anyway, just wanted to make sure no one says, well, he said, because he did have other quotes in favor of NIL in the past 12 months. Put it like that. Anyway, tackling one question from the fans, KRT says, a lot of people are up in arms after Harbaugh mentioned Haskins and Corum as RB1 and that Edwards would play from day one. He says, isn't this the best case scenario? If done properly, isn't running back by committee pretty much the norm now with short running back lifespans? Yeah, I'm a little surprised people aren't up in arms. I mean, I guess people are still annoyed about last year's rotation, and is that the concern? I think Haskins and Corum look like co-RB1s. You know, they kind of do two different things, in my opinion, or they're two different types of running backs. And I think Edwards, there's still a part of me that wonders if Edwards has a J.K. Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor type freshman season. But I think heading into fall camp without having done a fall practice yet, I don't think you can put him as a clear cut number one right now. I think they've got three really good running backs who all deserve carries and will get carries. I agree with you, KRT. I think this is the best case scenario. Steve, anything to add there?
It's weirdly like not much different from last year. If Edwards really
that
is
might
ready
be a
go.
Concern though, couldn't you?
Well,
argue?
I right. So again, we've talked almost, I feel like every episode it comes up somehow, but how if we did it last year, Chris Evans would have split out more. That would have opened up a lot of things. They didn't really do that very much. I think it's fine. Like I agree. Like the point is like the way that not necessarily committee, but close, you know, it's like the idea that yeah, you're not the days of well, I mean, Michigan won like when they ran Charbonnet, how many times against Army?
33.
Right. You're not going to see that often anymore.
No, very few teams do it.
Right. So,
and if they do, it probably means they don't have anyone else.
Yes, exactly. Well, Michigan does have guys. And so, yeah, no, I agree. I don't think this is a – it's weird to think when – Haskins has been pretty productive. You could argue he was one of their best players last year. To have a guy now in the conversation, to put it 1A, 1B, to me that says that that second guy has made some strides this in this instance, Corum. And then you have Edwards, obviously, as a five-star freshman, you know, a guy I still think should have been ranked even higher based off of he was just so good in his state playoffs last year. I mean, that was it was a different player. I think, like, I don't know how you could say that's a bad thing. I think people maybe are a little scarred from how weirdly things were kind of split last year. But, you know, I don't look at it as – I definitely don't look at it as a negative. I have maybe a little more faith that it'll work out to Michigan's benefit this season than it did last. Just because – yeah, and the other thing is, and this is where it's similar to last year, I feel like all three of these guys are, like, have different skill sets. And, like, there are ways to utilize that, you know. So I understand the hesitancy of some based on how last year kind of went down from that sole aspect, you know, the running back rotation, it was interesting. But I think with three guys and you have a clear cut top two, I think maybe kind of changes it a little bit. Because the Chris Evans thing, I think, I don't want to say threw a wrench in because he was my pick out of the draftees. I think he's going to be great. I think he's going to be a good NFL player, right? I mean, they're already hyped. They're already like him in Cincinnati. Under the coaches have made comments about him and stuff. But having a fourth guy kind of in that mix, you know, when Corum got the first touch of the year last year, you immediately kind of wondered, okay, yeah, Zach Charbonnet almost had a thought, you know, he had a freshman record for touchdowns. You had Haskins, who was the quietly maybe the most consistent of the backs. You have this stud freshman, and then you also get Chris Evans back. It was, you know, just a different kind of combo. And like I said, I think it could have been handled differently, particularly with Evans. But for this season, I think it's more of a benefit. We just got to see if they can kind of figure out a way to make it work. You know, I think players are more apt to being open to letting other guys run the ball for that simple reason of the mileage and stuff at back. I mean, I just saw Todd Gurley. They were talking about Todd Gurley. I don't know who he was being looked at by. It was like hard to believe. It's like Todd Gurley's already on the back end of his NFL career. It feels like yesterday Todd Gurley was at Georgia, you know, tearing it up. So if that gives you an idea, right? So I think it's to the player's benefit too, that maybe if you do have a guy who has a hot hand or something like that, you know, maybe you kind of go with the flow in that regard, you know, you don't hamstring yourself and say X, Y, Z are getting the same amount of carries, that type of crap, but, you know, limit and manage because you have enough talent there and guys that can produce. So I think, you know, I think it's you know, to have three talented players like that ready to go, that can't be a bad thing on the surface. It's just now we have to see how they kind of handle it.
Yeah. Jim Harbaugh has shown he can have a rotation of three running backs. I personally think four gets a little crowded. I think that can be really tough, especially, I mean, last season it just looked extra bad because they were trailing so much. So they had to pass. Nobody's getting enough carries. I think three, I mean, there's plenty of history with three. The only thing I would caution if I were advising Michigan, they're not asking for my advice, but the only thing I would add is if someone looks like they can run for 1500 yards, give them the ball, you know, Travis Etienne, JK Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor, you know, Saquon Barkley. There are certain running backs who can just really pop. I think, as you said, the hot hand. Make sure you're paying attention to who gets the hot hand. I would imagine Michigan is. I assume, I mean, Mike Hart, I think, has coached 1,000-yard rushers. I think he understands kind of what it's about. But yeah, at this juncture, really, I read Harbaugh's comments as him just saying, yeah, all three are going to play, which I think is all he can say right now. I mean, it, you know, they're all pretty young, or you know, Haskins, I guess, isn't that young. He's effectively a junior at running back. But, you know, Corum didn't get, he's had one set of spring practices, one fall camp, six games under his belt. Edwards has less than that. He has obviously just the spring practices so far. So I think him saying that was just him saying all three are going to play. I actually felt like he was asked about every position group throughout the course of the hour that he spoke with us. Felt like his depth chart was more or less the same. I posted a little VIP note, and in that I mentioned, I think I'm ready to pencil it Mazi Smith in as a starter on the defensive line based on all the comments. And then DJ Turner sounds like might be either neck and neck or even slightly ahead of Vincent Gray at this juncture for the number two cornerback spot, which is another, kind of like KRT says, another probably best case scenario for Michigan, is that someone is ascending to unseat a returning starter who had some struggles last season. So anyway, we're going to hit a quick break on the other side. A quick little discussion about everyone's favorite college football topic, conference realignment. This is the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Magical! Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work, in the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So, the same week that all these conferences were having their media days and all these conference commissioners were speaking and kind of, It's an annual thing where they tout their conference and how close it is and everything. Texas and Oklahoma banded together and decided to look elsewhere. I guess they haven't officially joined the Big 12 or the SEC, excuse me. But there is pretty much as strong reports as you can. I think both schools have released statements about it. They're going to join the SEC. Just a matter of when, not if, which could, you know, be the, you know, the pin in the grenade that kind of starts to shuffle everything. It sounds like the SEC is trying to build maybe a super conference. You know, there are rumors that Michigan and Ohio State, we'll talk about them in a moment, were contacted. Clemson and Florida State were contacted. You know, maybe they're trying to build just a gigantic, you know, really high level conference that can take over college football. But even if that doesn't happen, suddenly the Big 12 is down to 8 teams. So they're obviously either going to add teams or lose teams. I don't think they're sticking at 8 moving forward, especially not without their two big brands in Texas and Oklahoma. So there's lots of things being discussed. We'll try to keep it to a Michigan Big Ten perspective. Steve, let's start with this. If Michigan gets a call from another conference saying you can join, or we'd like you to join this conference, should Michigan stay on the line? I mean, should they consider it if it's being presented to them?
I don't think yet. Or not really. I mean, isn't the Big Ten still, didn't they generate the most revenue still of anybody?
No, the SEC, well, okay. Now, I don't know if they will every year, but the SEC, obviously, they had more games.
Right.
They had bigger payouts. Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Big Ten didn't even play, like, most of the teams didn't play
right.
nearly
right.
a full season. So, no, I don't think so. Not yet. I mean, the SEC, it just works out so well for the SEC. Because you know, with Texas and Oklahoma, they really barely expand their footprint. So it's not, they're still not stressing out the, you know, FC people talk about somehow kind of bringing the Pac-12 in or like getting some, picking off some Pac-12 teams, which I think you and I would agree. I think what you got, the five power conferences, the Big 12 looks dead in the water. I think the Pac-12 would be the next.
Yeah, I think
most
so.
Liable of the five, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if you do it to where you basically are still two separate conferences, and then the West, a West Coast team plays a Midwest team, you know, if the Big Ten took some Pac-12s, like how that works. But, you know, because I always think of like, I think of like West Virginia in the Big 12, like all the travel and stuff that their teams have to do for conference season. It's insane.
Well, and the fans just don't enjoy, I mean, maybe they enjoy it, but like, it's not like they have a natural rivalry with
none.
Iowa State or it's Texas, not like the fans interact with each other. Yeah,
right. Exactly. So for the SEC, it works out. Yeah, really well. You already have A&M. Oklahoma's just there. So like that,
if Arkansas, they have some history with.
Right. If there were two teams they could pick off, maybe nationally, outside of like, no, probably period. When you consider the markets and all that stuff, because you could say Clemson, Florida State. I mean, Texas's market is a top five, if not higher, level market. Mm-hmm. To add that to the mix, you know, that's a best case scenario for them. When it comes to the Big Ten, it's like, I don't know what direction you kind of go. Do you go the, because I did see the report this morning about the AAU credential stuff, you know, yeah. They only take an AAU credential team, which would cut out a lot of the, at least this further south you go, some of the potential football powers that some have maybe thrown around a little bit. But do you go the basketball route, right? I mean, do you try to raid the ACC and get like a Virginia and Duke and North Carolina? You know, I two things. Yeah, I think the Pac-12 is much more susceptible than the ACC, but I don't think the ACC is immune. Two, I think the Big Ten is that not the other. It's the I think the SEC and the Big Ten are the two big dogs. I think the Big Ten is the one most primed to add. I don't think you're going to see schools depart, right? Unless they tell a school to depart or get lost. I don't know if they can even do that, but you know, those are the two biggest things for me. It's like, yeah, I don't know. With football, it feels like it's going to be SEC's going to be a football factory. It already kind of is. You had Texas and Oklahoma to the mix. The Big Ten, it's like, could go the opposite route with basketball. I know Kansas was mentioned, which Kansas is obviously such a hugely underwhelming addition from a football standpoint, but is as appealing maybe from a basketball standpoint. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I've seen like SC and UCLA and Washington and like all these out West programs mentioned. And it's like, I just don't, unless you bring over like enough teams from that region to just make your own Big Ten West, or like, well, there's already a Big Ten West, Big Ten West division. I don't know how you only would add like a handful of those schools. How do you, you know, what if like you're telling me Rutgers has to fly to go play UCLA,
right?
You know, or something like that. Just like, it does logistically make zero sense. So if the West Coast route is a potential option, I think you're going to end up having to take seven or eight programs, I would think. And then what? I mean, is this all going towards two, you know, two big ones? So it feels like though. This is almost like you're building towards an AFC NFC, except
yeah,
each league is the size of a full NFL, you know?
Yeah. And at that point, I think you would almost see something where like I'm imagining, well, say the Big Ten added, I don't know, most of the Pac-12. You know, there's a couple schools in there that maybe don't have the brand and might get left behind. But let's say they add the California Four, you know, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, and Colorado, all of which are AAU institutions, by the way. At that point, you send Nebraska out there too. And you basically just have like almost two separate conferences, and maybe they have the same name, But yeah, at some point, I mean, you know, even the SEC is going to have this too, where like, it's not like these schools are going to all play each other every year.
Right.
I mean, if they have 16,
I assume there'd be programs that you'd go through. Like, I know they already kind of do the rotation, but I assume there'd be programs in a scenario like that. You're going to go 4 or 5 years without playing a certain program. So really it all just kind of ends up, you're almost spinning your wheels a little bit because yeah, you're playing in the same conference, but you know, how many Michigan fans are going to like, you know, I always think of the other thing I think of when you especially talk about going out west. I always think about how annoying it was when the Wings would play like Anaheim or San Jose in the playoffs. And it's like half of the series then is starting at like the game is starting at 10 o'clock at night. You know, how do you manage that? Maybe for the teams that don't draw primetime slots, right? I mean, you're going to have to start some games late at night. So that's why you talk about like a, you know, if Purdue has to go to Washington, they're not going to play that game. And, you know, that's not going to be a 3:30 slot probably, you know. So what does that do? If you're going to Seattle, the game's probably going to start at 10 o'clock at night, the same as it would if Washington was hosting Oregon State.
Right.
You know, so it's like there's all that too, I think, is just – you know, it's just all weird. But it all kind of boils down to the money, you know, and so I don't know.
Yeah, I still wonder. I think there's a little bit more smoke to the whole football. The football powers are just going to leave the NCAA and just kind of just operate like a pro league. I mean, they're not paying players necessarily, but they can police themselves. They can operate their own things and just make their own schedules. Cause yeah, I think the NCAA is running a situation where they're kind of, I think they're hurting schools more than they're helping schools at this point. You know, I think this summer allowing NIL compensation, allowing one-time transfer for good, you know, the extra year, they've made some good decisions lately, but it just seems like, moves like this is basically these conferences are gathering the power and the capital to, yeah, basically just have like an AFC and an NFC almost. Cause I wonder, I really wonder if the SEC is having conversations with Clemson, Miami, Florida State, and I would throw Georgia Tech into the conversation because they have a natural rivalry with Georgia. You know, add those four teams, you have the entire southern, southeastern part of the United States is all yours. But then suddenly the ACC is ripe for the picking too. So, yeah, I think it's very easy to get down the rabbit hole. I think in the short run, I got to think the Big Ten is open to adding two teams just to compete with the SEC's 16. The ACC made a lot of schools sign these really big, gigantic financial buyouts, which I suppose a team could pay, but that does seem to keep them guarded. So Louisville, Notre Dame, I think Pitt, Virginia, those are some of the schools that geographically and academically make sense to join the Big Ten. Feels like Kansas and Iowa State could be added tomorrow, though. You know, Iowa State, they're already in Big Ten territory. Kansas is not too far disconnected, if I'm not mistaken. They're both AAU institutions. As you mentioned, the Big Ten only going to add AAU institutions. Neither school really is going to rock the earth joining the Big Ten. I guess Iowa State's primed for a pretty good season. But I think a big thing that kind of spurred this is I think that 12-team playoff, because suddenly Texas and Oklahoma, for a long time, Oklahoma was kind of riding the good life. They were playing, you know, the Kansas States, Kansas, TCU, you know, very beatable teams. As long as they didn't lose twice, they were going to the playoff. But now I think with that expanded playoff, I think there's a little bit more of a, hey, play the good teams, be a part of the big games, not just to make sure you make the playoffs, but to also stand out to recruits and everything. So, Yeah, feels like Kansas and Iowa State would be added. Steve, do you think those are the best choices? Should the Big Ten kind of do what they did with Rutgers and Maryland and maybe look for the revenue boosting schools like in LA or Dallas, or I think Georgia Tech is quietly would be a pretty significant addition. I guess if you were the Big Ten, what's your approach? Because you're making tons of money as it is. Now you're kind of thinking about competitive, you know, what's the competition level? How are you making a conference that can compete with the SEC? I don't think that they really can from a football only standpoint, but from a fan base identity, I guess, overall purpose of college sports standpoint, how important is it to add the two teams, and which two teams would be your first calls?
So the one fascinating argument, not really fascinating, it's pretty, actually makes a lot of sense. It's not really a novel thought, but it just makes a ton of sense is to go west still. But if it's only two, like I said, it's hard to go west if you're only going to add two. Kansas and Iowa State make a decent amount of sense. Like I said, you talk about Kansas, the football versus basketball aspect. Iowa State right now kind of a sleeper pick for a potential playoff team this year in football. Mm-hmm. So in the present, but you know, long term, what is Iowa State on the football field? Are they back to mediocrity if Matt Campbell was to take a bigger job? Like, there's a lot of questions there, I think, for them across the board. The one reason, though, to go west is, you know, you could create a situation where Michigan is, or Michigan, I keep saying Michigan instead of the Big Ten, where the Big Ten is on every time slot, like, throughout the entire day.
Well, and if they teamed up with the Pac-12, they could honestly have a channel that's as big as, like, an FS1. You know, they could really, like it wouldn't just be the Big Ten Network, a nice regional channel that, you know, is on throughout much of the Midwest. Like, it could be like a legit national channel, I feel like.
Right. Think about like, say they added those like seven or eight schools out west, right? You get Colorado, Oregon, Washington, whatever, USC, UCLA. You know, yeah, you're talking about a situation where you could argue from noon until, I mean, you could have 13, 14 hours of like live sports cup, live football coverage.
True.
Every Saturday of the year, where what could happen is maybe Michigan, let's say maybe in Michigan, like maybe Michigan doesn't play Washington, or maybe Michigan doesn't play Oregon. You still think, though, if they're technically part of the Big Ten, that a Michigan fan at 10 o'clock at night would be more liable to tune in and watch Oregon play Nebraska than they would maybe to watch Mississippi State play. You know what I mean? So it would create a situation where they would be on TV all day, every Saturday of college football season. And I think it would create more national interest in the programs that actually become a part of the conference because they are a part of the conference. I think it would create more vested interest in fans that might not normally tune in to watch those games, knowing, you know, think about it. If they do four divisions or two giant divisions or whatever, there's a chance your team will play one of these teams at the end of the year still. You know, if they do, I assume they do some kind of crossover or some kind of, you know, way to determine a true champion. But so that would be the motivation there. And I think from that standpoint, it does make some sense. It's just, it's still kind of hard to wrap your head around like a, you know, 30 team conference. It's fascinating, but I feel like it's been headed in this direction for years. Not surprised to see the Big 12 is the first sort of domino to go. You know, what'll be fascinating is you talk about the Big 10 not wanting to add AAUs or non-AAU programs, is where do some of these other programs end up? Do they do their own? You know, like you look at, like, I know like a Pitt's in the ACC, but like a West Virginia, I guess, is one school. I'll be fascinated to see what happens with West Virginia if the Big 12 like just completely breaks apart, right? Like, what do they do? Because they've already been kind of the sort of the odd man out in the Big 12. We talked about the travel and stuff, like from them for their travel compared to every other school in the conference. It was like some outrageous number. I know one of our guys that covers West Virginia is fully convinced that it's impacted their national. They've kind of faltered in the tournament. You know, when they've always been pretty highly ranked, is like he's convinced that it's from them having so much more travel throughout the course of the season than other programs.
Oh, okay.
I think it makes some sense. I mean, in the macro sense, you know, it's like having to go back to Texas and then say you play Texas Tech the next weekend in Lubbock or something, you know, it's like that's strenuous for a student athlete. But anyway, I digress. Just saying there are going to be one school I'll be fascinated to see what kind of happens there and where the remnants of the Big 12 kind of end up. Because, yeah, now you have, a handful of smaller schools in the state of Texas that don't have a home now either. Talk about Baylor, right. TCU, Texas Tech. You know, where do those guys go? So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Just closing it up, I think it will be fascinating to see, because I agree with you that I don't think Michigan would field calls to leave the Big Ten. But one component, and we did get a question about this, would Michigan and Ohio State team up or kind of have each other's backs in a departure like this? Would Michigan and Ohio State do the same thing that Texas and Oklahoma did? And I think Texas and Oklahoma did. This sets an interesting precedent because they're not, the disparity in the Big Ten isn't quite as vast, but it is kind of crazy that Michigan and Ohio State are getting the same revenue from the Big Ten, you know, annual conference payouts as Northwestern, you know, who had, I think their football account has like 30,000 followers or something in that zone. And Michigan has like a million. They're getting the same payouts as Purdue. I think these days now is Rutgers, Illinois. You know, so I'm curious to see if Michigan and Ohio State, and part of me still thinks Ohio State fans would actually prefer to go to the SEC at this point, especially if Oklahoma and Texas are joining in. I think for a few years they felt like the Big Ten was holding them back, but now I'm curious if Ohio State and Michigan kind of start to put some pressure on the Big Ten, like, hey, maybe a full even keel revenue sharing isn't the way to go. If, because the big schools draw in more viewers, they draw in a little, you know, more, I guess, ticket sales, they get drawn more. They draw in more money. They do. I mean, yeah, Michigan and Ohio State are getting nearly $200 million in revenue in their athletic departments every year. So I'm curious about that point. I don't think that they would leave for like the ACC or the SEC, but I do wonder if they at least pick up the phone just so that they can have some leverage and maybe negotiate something behind the scenes with the Big Ten. Because yeah, all bets are off on all of this. I actually really like it. I always looking at the maps, and I've devised a power, you know, 64. That's like 8 very regionally bound divisions that make a lot of competitive balance sense. I think every football fan's done that at some point in the past 10 years. But now it's, you know, with name, image, likeness, with the expanded playoff, with transfers, with, I guess TV revenue isn't growing. So that'll be an interesting component is what these negotiations look like with more people streaming and TV revenue in general falling. But yeah, it's going to be, I think the card got taken out of the card pyramid, right? So something's going to fall somewhere. Another conference is going to either dissipate or endure a severe downgrade in prestige. So whether it's the AAC, the ACC, the Big 12, the Pac-12, maybe the Big 10. Somewhere soon, there's going to start to be changes, because I don't think the Big 12 is going to stay at 8. So whether they fold or add a bunch of teams really quickly, the realignment game has started up once again. It was calm for about 5 years. Now they're starting back up. Anyway, Any final thoughts on conference realignment?
Not really.
Okay. So with that, we're going to wrap up our podcast. Be sure to listen to all of our podcasts. Yes. Steve and Sam do a recruiting podcast. There's a basketball podcast, especially during the winter. They get all sorts of really great guests, including Tim McCormick, who's on every episode. So be sure to check it all out at the Michigan Insider Podcast Network. Throw us a rating. Throw us a subscribe. Tell your friends about it if you like it. I'm Zach Shaw for Steve Lorenz. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 Podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. See you next time.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.